The federal government miraculously came away unscathed by the recent WannaCry ransomware attack that hit more than 300 countries and impacted more than 300,000 computers worldwide. But was it really a miracle or some planning and hard work? In his weekly reporter's notebook, executive editor Jason Miller traces the real reason to 2014 and the aftermath of the Heartbleed attack. Jason joins me with more, and I think it is a success story that the federal government was okay on this one.
Absolutely, and it's so interesting to talk to feds, and they will tell you, and former feds too, by the way, will tell you, well, I don't want to call this a success yet, and they don't want to play it up too much.
They don't want to jinx it.
They don't want to jinx it, right. But I think you and I can play it up a little bit, Tom, because we've been around long enough to see the problems, and we've seen the ongoing struggles of the federal cybersecurity, and we can go back to 2014, and we can go back to 2008 and 2009 with the love virus and all these other things that have happened. You can go back to Y2K even and say, look at all this problems that they've suffered through, and here a worldwide attack, a major attack. And generally speaking, and I know, you know, maybe the final results aren't in, but the government came away saying, hey, this didn't affect us.
Actually, I go back to 1986 was my first federal computer security conference. They didn't even call it cybersecurity back in those days. So it is a long struggle. So what did you find? Why was the government successful this time around?
I think you can point to a couple things. Let me go back to 2014 and the Heartbleed. Remember, Tom, this was a major virus. This very much hit the federal government. And the differences between now and 2014 is just clear as day. In 2014, there was a scramble. There was calls. There was, oh my, what do we do? We're in trouble. What systems do we have? This time, it was more mature of a process. I talked to Trevor Rudolph. He's a former chief over at OMB, talking around cybersecurity division. He worked in the eGov office, the CIO's office. He was at OMB for about 5 years up until about 2016. So he saw the 2014 Heartbleed attack. And the way he presented it to me was very clear. There was this lack of maturity. There was these calls. There was these almost like, he didn't use the word panic, but I'll use the word, oh, what are we going to do? Now, when I talk to someone like Jeanette Manfred from DHS, who's the acting undersecretary for cybersecurity, she said, listen, we had a call. We knew what to do. We knew where the systems were. We knew what we had to get done.
The lead agency on this being
DHS and OMB. Previously, the lead agency was OMB, with DHS coming in late. If you remember, after the Heartbleed virus, where DHS had to beg and plead and ask for permission to go into agencies to help them with their cyber.
Yes.
Now DHS has the authority to go in and look at agencies.
And it might be true also that agencies are more willing to have DHS come and help because they know the damage and reputational damage, systems damage, right, data loss that can happen. And why not?
That's absolutely right on. I think that's part of this maturity. So, Tom, what I learned about this, and this is fascinating, within hours of this attack starting to really get across the world, and DHS learned about it, they were able to deconstruct the malware. They were able to understand the signatures and put those signatures into the Einstein 3A program. Why that's important, Tom, is basically this. As soon as they understood what the signatures were, they could have Einstein block the attacks. So a signature is a piece of software, is a piece of code that's coming across the internet. It's when the Einstein 3A system sees, oh, that code's trying to get in, they block it, they keep it out. 2014, they couldn't do that.
So that's the Einstein 3 technology that
Correct.
Has been finally, I think it's in all agencies.
98% of the
mostly.
Government uses it now. The second thing that wasn't around 2014 that was around now that really paid off was the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program. Yes, CDM is still in early stages. Yes, it's not moving as quickly as you'd hope, but there are about 11 or so agencies that have their agency-wide CDM dashboard up. What OMB was able to tell them, and this is what Jeanette Manfred told me last week, was we were able to tell those agencies, go look at your dashboard and go figure out where the vulnerabilities exist. So for those 11 agencies, they could pull up the data and go, oh, we have this that needs to be patched, we have that needs to be patched, and we have that needs to be patched, go do it now.
Because the WannaCry did exploit flaws in several Microsoft operating systems, both desktop and server, some of them obsolete, but some of them that if they had been updated, then you were in better shape. So maybe this is a good reinforcement of the idea of continuous monitoring, but also continuous updating. It's not just a technical exercise.
I think you're absolutely right. And that leads us down that other piece of why it's different. Because the cyber sprint, and we'll trace this back to the post-OPM hack 2015, 2016, the patching now has to be done within 30 days. High vulnerability systems have to be patched within 30 days. And that was a binding operational directive that came from DHS. Agencies, for the most part, are much better about it. Perfect? No, but much better about it. And because they know through CDM what their assets are, they know that they have this binding operational directive to patch within 30 days. All these pieces now are together, and now DHS is able to lead it. And I think those are the reasons why, among others, hard work by federal CIOs, federal CISOs, understanding by top leadership and non-IT folks, that is why 2017 is much, much different than 2014.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller. I guess this kind of ties in with something else you're writing about this week, which is the passage by the House of the Modernizing Government Technology Act. And one of the ways you modernize is to get rid of old operating systems, or at least patch to the latest version available.
Well, and some aren't even available, like Windows XP, which ransomware, this WannaCry, took advantage of. There are no more patches. In fact, Microsoft had to put out a patch back in February, March timeframe because they realized this was such a big vulnerability. But yeah, the MGT is supposed to, big play on MGT is around cybersecurity. Get off these old systems that can't be secured and get on new ones. So MGT passed through the House, major hurdle. Now it's up to the Senate. I will offer this, Tom, let's slow down on the celebration that this got through the House, because the Senate will be much more difficult. And let me tell you why. And let me back up for a sec. I got so many emails from public affairs people, public relations people, asking to talk to their experts on MGT. And my response has been, okay, that's great, it got through the House, but let's wait till it becomes, gets through the Senate and on the way to President Trump to be signed into law.
What is the big beef that the Senate has with the House version?
From what I'm hearing is, while there are definitely supporters in the Senate, Senator Moran, Senator Udall are big ones, there are some on the Senate Appropriations Committee that potentially are worried about the working capital fund structure that MGT sets up. As a reminder, Tom, under the Modernizing Government Technology Act, each agency would get their own working capital fund, and they would have to, by saving money, moving, let's say, to the cloud or moving off old legacy systems, that would cost, and we'll make the numbers up, $1 million a year, and they move to the cloud, and that only costs $500,000 a year. They can keep that other $500,000, put it in this working capital fund to apply toward other projects that need to be updated. And the worry in the Senate that I'm hearing is that those working capital funds too often have been abused, become quote-unquote slush funds.
Or they save it up and it accumulates year after year.
Well, they're allowed to do that up to 3 years, but then never gets used for the right thing.
Now, the Obama administration had pushed for a OMB-operated central fund, where I guess maybe it would be easier to keep your eye on the kitty. Is that what the Senate wants? Because that sounds like a pretty fundamental difference.
So the MGT bill has a central fund of only $500 million, $250 million a year for 2 years. So they get kind of the best of both worlds. What the Obama administration was looking for was about a $3 billion fund. That's not going to happen. Nobody, I don't think, thinks that they can spend $3 billion on modernizing IT, no matter how bad it is. But I think the Senate is still working through some of these challenges. I talked with Congressman Hurd, who is a main author of the MGT bill, and he offered some positive responses in terms of this. We're working with the Senate. We're trying to alleviate their concerns. We understand what they are. How quickly this moves is the key. Have they alleviated those concerns enough, or they still want more questions and more, if you will, oversight over those working capital funds?
I guess the issue now is, can they spare the staff to work on this while the senators deal with the great weighty issues of the future of democracy and everything else they're investigating?
Well,
this is not a super priority right now.
That's a great point, too. Another reason why the MGT bill within the Senate could slow down. Now, who knows, Tom, in the next week or two, we could be having this conversation about the Senate passing the bill. But you're right, there's a lot on the senators' plates. This does not rise to the level, no matter how much we want to talk about WannaCry and ransomware and OPM hack and Target and JP Morgan Chase and all the others. But the fact is, they have a lot of other issues going on in front of them. And that will obviously pull back from something like MGT.
Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller, as always, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Tom.
Check out his notebook now online at federalnewsradio.com.